On yesterday's show, we heard some of the hard-hitting stories from security force personnel who were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, this followed a report from the MOD showing a massive rise in the armed forces seeking help for mental health issues. I want to let you hear once again some of the harrowing testimonies from yesterday from former soldiers and others who had first-hand experience of the troubles.
I was involved in an incident in 1988 in Bridge Street in Lisburn. It was really traumatic, and after then I developed an alcohol problem, a dependency on alcohol. I was having flashbacks, and I still have them to this day.
We went to Ireland. The things I've seen and the things that happened in Ireland. Bloody Sunday, people being shot, my mates being shot. They build up. It's a shock after shock. If fireworks go off now, I'd die. I'm 63 now, and I'm still diving on the floor.
There was a lot of people hurt. There was 20 people injured, and the gentleman was lying in the car, and his arms and legs were blown off, and his head was pointing next to me, and I thought he was still alive because his head was moving, and the other colleague that was with me was shouting at me, you know, he's dead, but that image is with me every single day.
What do images of dead bodies actually do to you?
They come in flashbacks. I have to sleep in a separate bed at night time because I scream, I punch, fight. I don't sleep. I probably get about 2 hours sleep every night. I have no social skills. I cannot keep a job. The thing is, when you leave the army, they just throw you out and forget about you. And the lot of us can't cope.
I talk to the dead bodies in my sleep. I see the dead bodies in my sleep. I hardly eat. I don't sleep because when I go to sleep, I'm having nightmares. When you come out of the armed forces, they might look after you about this is how you write a CV, but they don't detune you, and they certainly don't take the baggage off you that you've seen when you've been in there.
I'm heavily medicated, and it took me years to get clinically diagnosed with PTSD. Basically, there's no help out there.
The Oxford Street bomb, we had to go down and help, and we were looking at bits of bodies and bits of this and bits of that. And I'm 68 now, and I can still see them things. You see these things, and they're in your head, and you can never get them out. Bits of bodies, bits of this, bits of that, bits of you name it. It was there, fingers, toes, nose, eyes, you name it.
The PSNI, do they not offer you help?
The system tried to deny what had happened to me.
What about the police, Thomas? I keep on hearing about a police family. Are they surrounding you with help and assistance and love?
There's no such thing as a police family.
Ross Hussey, Ulster Unionist Party MLA, you served 26 years in the police.
We and the people concerned are not getting the support they should be getting, either from the British government or from others.
And why is that?
They're forgotten. People want it to go away. They're more interested in trying to say that everything in the garden is true. People have stopped. And the PTSD issue will only get worse.
The DUP MP, Geoffrey Donaldson. Morning to you, Geoffrey.
They're not receiving the support and care that they need. We believe that the Covenant isn't delivering in terms of providing support to those veterans who have mental health problems.
Pete's not your real name. You served for 16 years in the Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service.
I was diagnosed with severe post-traumatic stress disorder. Very, very bad flashbacks, waking up at night, sweating in bed. You'd actually thought I'd wet the bed. I actually witnessed going to an incident where a three-year-old child was burnt to a crisp. I basically had to put that child in a bag and then really wake off him.
We're just picking things up, but you didn't know really what half the things were you were picking up.
And that's what you now see in your head?
Yeah, certainly I do. I see it every day.
At the time, you are sort of, you don't take it on board, but it's when you come home at night and you're lying in bed and you visualise that all happening. It's like Groundhog Day every day. The slightest little thing can tend to spark it off.
When they're finished with you, do you feel they look after you? Were you looked after?
No, they don't.
Were you forgotten about?
Correct.
Well, that's some of the aftermath of what those people have gone through. And they're still living with it. And every time they hear Northern Ireland has moved on, let's look to the future, quite a few of those people feel forgotten. Quite a few of those people feel abandoned by the security forces, by the army, by the police. And I made the point yesterday that for any youngster now being recruited into the PSNI, for any youngster now being recruited into the army, it's very, very much a valid question for me to ask that person to contemplate, how are they going to be looked after when they're churned back out again at the end, when they leave the force? Is there someone going to put their arm around them and say, we understand you're a human being, therefore we understand that you may have serious stress disorder because of what you've done serving your country, and therefore we will look after you? Because quite a few people are telling this programme that they are not looked after. Quite a few people are telling this programme that they feel abandoned. And when we contacted the PSNI, the Assistant Chief Constable Alistair Finlay gave us a statement telling us of how serving police officers were looked after by a whole range of services. There's an occupational health and wellbeing unit to improve the health and wellbeing of police officers and police staff serving police officers and police staff. But they do point out that they do not offer, that's the OHW, the Occupational Health and Wellbeing Unit, does not offer services to retired officers. And the Assistant Chief Constable then went on to talk about the wider police family of support organisations which give support to retired officers. But it's not that unit within the police. Maybe people should ask why not. Right, we're going to speak this morning to the former hunger striker, Jared Hodgkins. Morning to you, Jared.
Morning, Stephen.
So we've been talking yesterday and indeed today about those in the security forces who have this post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yep.
But in paramilitary organisations, people who are in paramilitary organisations, there will be stress disorder as well. Whether people approve of what you did or not, there will be mental stress. What have you gone through?
Stephen, I was listening to your show yesterday, so I was listening to the contributors ringing in. And for by the fact that they were members of the RUC or the British Army, they could have been the stories of many, many people whom I know and would come in contact with who suffered from the same sort of post-traumatic stress problems having come through the conflict. Politically, we all came at life from our own sort of perspectives, but psychologically, we all seem to end up in the same abyss. And the significant numbers live in isolation, unable to develop and maintain relationships, they have no focus. And mental health services really are the poor second cousin within health provision. I don't believe they are taken as serious as they should be and as serious as they need to be taken to head off the massive traumas that an awful lot of our people live with.
So Jared, some people will see you as an ex-combatant.
Yep.
Other people will see you as a former terrorist.
Yep.
Let's focus today on asking you the same questions as I asked the security forces. What's in your head? Can you share some of the experiences to me that are flashbacks that traumatise you? Give me a sense so that people understand.
My main flashbacks that I would get, Stephen, would be in relation to my prison experience as I spent 16 years in Longcash. And the other major flashback that
Tell me about that. So what is it in prison that you experienced?
Oh, well, I served two terms. I served 10 years from 17 to 27, and then when I was 30, I was back in for another 6 years. My first term of imprisonment was a particularly brutal time. It was the time of the H-blocks culminating in the hunger strikes. That was just a brutal existence. And my second period of imprisonment came about, I suppose, through the 30 War. I ended up being charged falsely with false imprisonment. And 20 years later, I was brought back to court and the conviction was overturned. No explanation given to it.
But Jared, let's because that's for another day for us to speak about. Yeah. Tell me about what traumatizes your brain. So what these incidents are. When you get flashbacks, what are they?
Well, flashbacks, I would sometimes find myself sitting here in my own place, and next thing, I will be back in a cell. It's very real. It's uncanny. You're right back in a cell, and it's the silence of just before rat squads would come on for wing shifts, and they would beat you at times like that. I also would have a very vivid image in my head of a funeral of a man called Finbar McKenna. It was attacked on the Falls Road outside the Royal Victoria Hospital, and I escorted a man, Sean Keenan, into the hospital, and when I came out afterwards to rejoin the funeral, I'll never forget the whole sort of Falls Road outside of the Royal Victoria Hospital. It was perfectly still. There wasn't a word. The whole funeral had moved on, but the road was littered with dozens and dozens of people's shoes and prams, which in the melee of the attack had come off. And that's an image which still sort of resonates within my head, the brutality of that day.
What do you see? What do you see in your head? You see the shoes? Is that what it is?
The shoes, and there was the proms, and I was like, I don't know why. Prior to that, the actual attack on the funeral was much, much more traumatic, if they use that word. It was violent, but it was that stillness afterwards, the complete stillness. There was nobody about on the Falls Road. There was no army. There was no police. Everything had moved on. There was no people. It was just a still scene littered with shoes and proms.
And what does that do to you? Does that keep you awake at night?
It does. Sometimes you don't control your emotions. If you're watching a show and it's covering some part of the history here from the 70s, the 80s or whatever, you can lose control of your emotions and you just become very sort of tearful. You can't process information just normally. You're still living, and in a way you're still living in the past. You're stuck in the past and you can't escape from it. In my own sort of particular case, there's not a single day that's passed in my life where I do not at some stage turn to 1981.
So you have nightmares?
Yep. Nightmares and also intrusive thoughts. And all those.
What are the intrusive thoughts?
I used to have very intrusive thoughts about ending it all. That life was completely, totally worthless. That it was more a burden on society and people about me than being in any way helpful or, you know, conducive to them. And from that, you would retreat. My self-medication would be retreating into a bottle of whiskey. That numbs it. I know it doesn't cure, it doesn't help you, but it does numb the pain that you'd be feeling.
So, Jared, as someone that was part of a paramilitary organisation, and I acknowledge that we could talk to people in the other community who were part of paramilitaries, okay? So I acknowledge that. But I've got to say to you that there will be some people thinking this morning that what you're traumatised by is not stress disorder, but profound guilt, and that maybe you deserve not to be able to sleep at night because of what you were prepared to do.
No, well, I can categorically...
Maybe it's guilt.
...say that I am not plagued in any way by guilt. I thought long and hard about the directions we were going in the early 1990s. About what I had done, what I had contributed to. And I can honestly say, Stephen, that within my own conscience, I feel myself to be a decent person. I know people will say I'm a terrorist and stuff like that, and we use those words and bandy them about, but I have never felt myself to be a terrorist or a morally wrong person.
Let me let Martina speak to you this morning. Morning, Martina.
Morning.
Morning, Martina.
Jared, I absolutely can't believe that you are on that radio show saying them things. I really, you are one hypocrite. See the men and the women and the men that were on that radio station yesterday, they did not have a choice in the matter. They went out and done their job. You and every other paramilitary man or woman, they went out and they knew exactly what they were doing.
They well, but then, Martina, you're right. I'm going to agree with you there in a sense.
What they were doing. Everything that you've done within your own conscience, them men and women working out and getting paid for doing what they done, they didn't have a clue what they were going to find. You knew you were going to have to kill those people. You knew you were going to have to do whatever you were going to do. So that there is your own problem. That is your problem. See the men and the women that are lying, suffering today. It is because of you. It is because of you.
No, well, no, I would disagree with you on that, Martina, because see the
here's what I'm going to do. Well, here's what I'm going to do. If you can both stay there, because it's a very important discussion, this, because whether someone's a paramilitary or not, whether someone's a soldier or not, if they've got post-traumatic stress disorder, they've got it. Right, good morning. We're in the middle of a very, very important and interesting conversation. And some of you having a go at me on our Twitter feed this morning, at Stephen Nolan, saying, how can I compare the stress of security forces to the stress of paramilitaries? Well, you know, whether... first of all, I'm not doing any comparing. And secondly, you know, of course you're entitled to distinguish between security forces and paramilitaries, but the actual brain stress, the mental anguish, if it's there, it's the same anguish, whether you like it or not, whether you look upon it as having equal merit to acknowledge, it is the same anguish. Jared Hodgkins here, who is a former hunger striker, he would view himself as an ex-combatant. Some of you would view him as an ex-terrorist, as you would view other loyalists as ex-terrorists, ex-combatants, whatever way you like. But he gets nightmares about the stuff that he saw in the Troubles. And that's the bottom line. And he's with us this morning. Martina, surely you can acknowledge that Jared's pain feels the same to him as the pain in a police officer, and as the pain, but feels the same to him, Martina.
No, I can't, because he chose to go out and do that.
But what he's feeling, what he is feeling, Martina, I'm not asking about whether it was morally right or wrong, but he's feeling the anguish.
No, he chose to walk out with that gun in his hand and shoot somebody. He did choose to go out and do that. He knew what he was doing.
Go ahead, Jerry.
The man,
I haven't shot any bullet.
Yeah, well, let's clear that up very quickly.
I don't know what he's done.
Well, then don't accuse him of doing stuff he hasn't done. Jared Hodgkins, go ahead.
I haven't shot anybody. Martina, I was just saying, you're looking at a sort of from a political angle of the prejudices that we live in here. My conscience, I can tell you, is very clear. Did I have a choice to go out and do what I'd done? I probably did, but I was a product of a sectarian gerrymander.
I'm not looking at it as a family political boy. I'm talking about
citizen and a spice of state. Also,
hold on, Martina. Hold on, both of you. I want to talk about the post-traumatic stress this morning, and I don't want us to get into an argument as to whether paramilitaryism was right or wrong. It's about the stress.
I'm talking about every single paramilitary person, whether it be Protestant or Catholic.
Okay, Martina.
They all know what they're doing.
Okay, I want to say thank you. Jared, tell us more about the flashbacks that you get. I want to understand what the aftermath is all of these years later. So you say you can't sleep at night, Jared? And you say you see these images.
Difficulties with sleeping, seeing images. A lot of the stuff that once we're talking about yesterday, depression, insomnia, having sweats, anxiety, anger, nightmares. It's part of it, Stephen. Whatever way the brain goes, I don't fully understand it. I do know that it's an issue that over the past few years has become more of a conversational topic on the media, looking at the brain and stresses. Previously, it was seen as being sissy-ish to talk about such issues, and you weren't really supposed to go away and work it out yourself. So I would say the only good thing about discussions like this on your show and on other shows is that as this 21st century progresses, that governments just make factor in whenever they're making decisions to go to war or to send people out to fight their wars, because the governments don't fight them. they may just have to factor in the what's we're becoming the, we're beginning to learn is long-term consequences of putting people in the conflict situations.
You know, you've been talking about post-Troubles trauma across all sections of the community, from ex-paramilitaries to ex-security force. Do you think part of the stress is down to the question, what was it all for?
Yep, probably. It could be. I don't know if it's the exact answer, but in my own head, for what we achieved, it wasn't worth the effort.
And that adds to the trauma, does it?
It would. I'm guessing at it. I mean, I'm not a professional on it. Mm. But I would say it probably does unfulfilled expectations.